Hello and welcome to the Arrow Video Podcast with Sam and Dan. My name is Dan Martin, special effects artist and podcaster, and I am joined, as ever, by my beautiful co-host,
Sam Ashurst. And I'm a writer, I'm a director, I'm a podcast person, and I am here to talk about the wonderful Dan Martin's choice for this time around. It's an interesting one because we're doing a sequel to a film we haven't covered before. You've wanted to do this for a while, Dan. Why are you so passionate about this movie, specifically, you know, this sequel?
What's really weird about this film is that I was very familiar with this director's oeuvre without knowing who this director was until I saw this film.
Right.
And this film, I think you'll agree with me, Sam, whatever else we say in this episode, this film is baffling.
Yes.
Like, so I was like, what the living fuck is going on? Because it's like, it's technically incredibly accomplished. There is some, like, unbelievable showboating going on in this film. I came to this movie during my Ekin Chen period. I think I'd probably just watched Storm Riders for the first time, like, maybe 2 or 3 years earlier. And, I mean, that may be incorrect based on the time that these films were released. But, like, so I knew who Ekin Chen was. He was this rising, like, young, handsome star, like, kind of a young Johnny Depp kind of character in Hong Kong. And I was watching all of his stuff. This is during the time, and regular listeners will know, that I had a relationship with Asian cinema that was mostly predicated on me turning up at the back rooms of shops in Chinatown and being like, what do you got? And this is one of those films. So I'd not seen the first movie at the point that I saw this. So it's one of the reasons I wanted to do number two before we did number one.
Okay.
If we ever do number one.
We're never doing number one, by the way.
No, it's fine. No, it's fine. No, we don't need to. Because, like, I think number one is a more accomplished film.
Yes.
But number two is, like, is somehow more perfect. Because, so number two, Johnny Toe, like, I didn't know who he was before this movie. And then after I saw this film, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? I looked into credits and Johnny Toe's name came up. I guess I was like 18, 19 at this point. Again, don't check the maths on that. Maybe I was 40. And and I looked him up and I was like, oh, fuck, I've seen that. That was amazing. Oh, that's great. I've seen that. That was amazing. And it felt like it was one of these films where it made a lot of stuff fall into place. It's right. Very different to a lot of stuff that Johnny Toe has made. It's certainly different to a lot of the stuff that he's, like, known for, the stuff that he's famous for. But also it feels like a kind of, it feels like both a love letter and a pastiche of all of that stuff. It's so weird. And actually, having seen the first one since, it feels like kind of a Gremlins 2 of the want a sequel that takes everything and dials it up to 11, well, I'll fucking give you it and you'll deal with what you get. Everything about it is very weird, but I have such a good time watching this film. And I genuinely hope you had the same experience, Sam, but I think you might not have given the way we approach this episode.
Well, here's the thing, right? That explains a lot. And yeah, I'm really glad to hear the backstory because you were just so, so excited about this release. From the moment it was announced, you really wanted to do this on the podcast. And I had delayed it because I was a little bit worried about doing a sequel that not many people have seen to a film that not many people have seen. However, recently I'm like, well, do you know what? This is what the Arrow podcast is all about. We've done quite a lot of mainstream titles recently and, you know, Dan has a passion for this and it is our job to highlight the cult gems in the collection as much as it is to talk about stuff like, you know, Tremors and Tremors 2 and all the rest of it. So I was actually excited to go into it and I will say that you did say... when you said that we do the sequel, you know, Running Out of Time 2.
Yeah.
You were like, oh, Sam, these are total standalones. We can just skip the first one, do this one. But there are several callbacks, Dan, and returning relationships.
But you don't need them.
That are established in the first film. technically, I guess you don't need them to understand what's going on, but I think it does enrich the relationships if you have seen the first one first. So I do advise anyone listening to this to watch the first one, partly because of that, but also I just literally infinitely preferred the first one. There's a subplot here about sunk cost fallacy, which is probably like my favorite part of the whole thing, but the sequel is, it's just diminishing returns for me. I much preferred the first movie.
100%. Like, the thing is, the first is objectively a better film.
Yeah. I mean, it's still quite like, silly, but it feels smarter and it has a more emotional payoff, you know?
For our audience listeners who know Johnny Toe from his, like, his big hits, so, like, The Mission, for example, which is, like, kind of gritty and aggressive. Yeah. This is not what is on display here. This is it's really fucking weird. It's like he decided to do slapstick and didn't tell any of his actors.
I'm just going to jump in with something I think that will illustrate the point you're making. There is a subplot involving a CGI hawk. I don't think, you know, in the world of the film, it's a real hawk.
Yes.
But for us, it's
there's a few shots that where it's a real hawk.
Okay, like maybe I'll go back and shots. Look for them. But yeah, it uses that generic hawk sound effect you hear in every single low-budget movie that takes place in the desert.
And also all westerns made between like 1971 and 1997.
Yeah, and also in movies like Savage and Legend of the Magic Arch. And this is something that Shay and I always listen out for. We love the fake hawk sound effects. So I'm sad that I actually didn't watch this one with her because there's at least 50. I'm definitely not going to spoil this because this is right at the end. But I just want your reaction to this, Dan. So yeah, no spoilers. But the payoff to this film is fucking insane. One of the craziest newspaper reveals I have ever seen.
This is the thing. When I first heard that Arrow was releasing this, and I have like a weird side angle, because I believe you watched this on streaming on the Arrow video
player.
That's
right. Yeah, I did.
So I watched this as part of the two-disc Blu-ray set that includes the original film as well. And for some fucking reason, I do not know what's going on here, the disc I got still has Eureka titling on it.
Oh, what?
So when you put it in, there's no Arrow branding at all. Like, wow. It doesn't have the Arrow logo at the front. It doesn't have... Like, it's basically like I've put a Eureka disc in the machine. So I was immediately blindsided. Like, the entire movie, I had this weird thing, like, hanging over me, like, have I made Sam watch a film that isn't an Arrow film?
After all of this months of...
After all this, like, I've been pushing for this for, like, 8 months.
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's so good. And then we got to the end... Like, the thing is, this whole film feels like someone is about to come out and tell you you've been tricked.
Yes.
Like, that's the experience of watching this movie.
Yeah.
It's such a weird film. Those of our audience who have dealt with Hong Kong cinema en masse, not just the stuff that's been getting re-released, the weird shit that we would watch in the 90s when we were just like absorbing everything, like the Eastern Heroes era, mm-hmm. when there was no filter, there was no curation. So we're just literally like I was when I watched this, just buying anything that the shops in Chinatown told you was worth watching, told you was successful. Like, you're just... dealing with some stranger's filter of another culture's blockbuster culture. And it's like, it's so peculiar, this film. We so regularly celebrate Korea's like divorce from the genre structure of narrative and how it means you can't predict what's going on. I feel this film underlines that it's maybe not enough to just be unpredictable.
That's really interesting. That does reflect something about Arrow and maybe even more this podcast, our dynamic, because I feel like a lot of your choices are designed, especially stuff where you really push for it, it's stuff where you really want to recapture a feeling that you had on first viewing. And I think that's a lot of where Arrow's curation, when it's at its best, comes from. You know, producers who pick some total weirdo gonzo slasher for example, where you're like, what the fuck
you're
is this?
Doom Asylum.
Yeah, well, that's a great example. And by the way, I hosted a screening of Return of Swamp Thing recently, and a guy came up to me afterwards, and he's like, oh yeah, Arrow podcast, right? I haven't actually listened to Arrow, but my dad, I think it's his dad, was involved in the making of Doom Asylum, so I'll have to check out that episode. And I was like, oops, because I seem to remember not particularly liking that one either. But
I think you fully hated it, but you were very compassionate about your emotional response to it.
Right. Well, that's good, because yeah, I'm not here to take down stuff, and you know, there is stuff in this that, I mean, for me, the experience of watching this was really sitting down going, right, Dan's been asking for this every time we've tried to negotiate what our choice is going to be. Like, for literally every single time. Why did I push it away? Let's just watch it. It's going to be something magical. It's going to be something special. And I was like, well, it is. But I can guarantee that Dan has some sort of weird nostalgic connection to this. And good for you, like, I think that's great, and I hope that people listening to this will give it a try based on your love for it, and also maybe even my reaction to it, because hopefully people are intrigued by the fact that I'm sitting here saying it has the most insane newspaper reveal I've ever seen, because that's no hype, no exaggeration. I could not believe the ending of this movie, and I can completely imagine you whooping and hollering and laughing when that hit the screen, right?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's literally insane. The audacity of the end of this film is this is Tom Cruise times 1,000,
right?
Like, the idea that this was an acceptable way to end the film.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I genuinely love it. And like, this is the thing. Yeah. Sorry, Sam. Give me just a second to implore our audience. The film itself is a casting call of character actors from Hong Kong cinema that you will be familiar with, many of whom are delivering genuinely fantastic roles. The narrative itself is convoluted in a delightful way. The aesthetic is a weird melange of analog perfection. Genuinely, there's a scene in this where they fucking reference the first film to win an Oscar. Like, there's a scene in a cafe at the beginning where they rip off a shot from Wings. And then there's stuff on a building top where it could so easily be a stage. And yet they're like pulling the fucking camera out, and you're seeing a drop that is VFX were not capable of faking this at the time. Every time you see someone sitting on the edge of a building and it like pitches down and you see the height, they're on the edge of that building.
Yeah,
they were doing stressful. Like yeah. Insurance, like, yeah, like there were insurance brokers pulling their fucking hair out over this picture. It's absolutely delightful, and none of it is important. that's the thing I really love about this film, is that it's just like Johnny Toe is just showboating like a fucking maniac.
You talked about Johnny Toe a little bit. I'm also a Johnny Toe fan. I'd say in terms of what I've seen of him, the closest comparison I would make to this is probably something like Mad Detective.
Oh yeah, 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 that's a very good, yeah.
And in terms of my favourite, I really love Vengeance, with Johnny Halliday starring. Fantastic. I enjoyed it. I think we should probably move on after your wonderful speech imploring people. Like, that makes me want to watch it again, Dan. So, good job. And should we do recommendations based on the film? I think you should probably go first.
The thing is, if this is the first Johnny Toe film you've watched, this is not a Johnny Toe film. Like,
yes,
it is. He made it, but this is not what he is famous for.
No.
So he did, like, I don't know. He's not super prolific. He did like 30 pictures, which sounds like a lot, but it's not a lot in the Hong Kong scheme of things. I remember Jen and I, my wife and I, were at Cannes one year, and a film called Triangle was playing, which is my first recommendation, by the way.
Hey, seamless.
And Triangle is a like, it's one of the boldest portmanteau pictures, because it's a singular narrative, but with each act directed by a different director. And I remember being at Cannes and hearing that that this had happened, this weird version of a portmanteau picture had happened, and that Johnny Toe was going to be was one of the three directors, and I'm like, I absolutely have to see this. And for those of our audience who aren't privy to the weird and slightly archaic way in which Cannes agrees its screening access for the mainstream pictures, if you're on the list for people that can go to the screenings, you have a sign-in password on a website, and you can assign yourself, you can bid almost for films. But if you get a ticket and you don't go, it will count against you in the value that you have for future ticket requests. So occasionally you have these weird, but also you have to be in black tie to go to any of these screenings. So you have this weird scenario where outside of the big screenings at Cannes, you have all these people who have turned up in black tie but don't have tickets, holding signs that say the name of the film that they want to go and see. And similarly, you have people who are hungover to fuck and cannot go and see a movie in a sort of 1,500 person auditorium, just trying to fucking desperately have their ticket accepted because they don't want to not be able to go and see the Palme d'Or picture the next night. So through various machinations, Jen and I ended up going to see Triangle, this picture, which is such a weird film. Not in the same way that Running Out of Time 2 is a weird film, but in that it's a portmanteau picture, but it's a singular narrative following the same characters across three acts, but each act is directed by a different director. And then I Jen and I both had terrible food poisoning when it came to the night, but because of this whole system where you can't, if you don't go to the film, it'll be held against you, we both just went to the film. And then had to sit through this movie with awful food poisoning. Oh, wow. I genuinely thought I was going to die during this movie. Which is about drugs trafficking at the trifecta point of these three Asian countries known as the Golden Triangle. And it's I've not seen that film since. And I really hope that anyone who takes me up on this recommendation enjoys it in the way that I did. You know how you watch a movie and you enjoy it at the time a bit? But then the further you get away from it, that enjoyment kind of echoes throughout time.
Yeah.
And you end up feeling like it was an amazing movie, even though you can't really recall the bits that you feel made it amazing. Yeah, that's Triangle. And it might be terrible, and I'm really sorry if I'm recommending a bad film, but I genuinely don't think it is terrible. I think it's three fantastic directors. Johnny Toe was the big name when we were at Cannes, and it's a weird, wild conspiratorial ride.
Yeah, it's got Ringo Lam and Sui Hark are the other two directors.
Sui Hark, who I knew at the time, was I knew from Warriors of the Magic Mountain, which was, again, sort of the mystical realism, the wire-based Wuxia stuff. He was the god of that for me at the time. I don't know how much I'd seen beyond that, but that was certainly the center of that subgenre. And Ringo Lam stuff, I mean, obviously Ringo Lam's incredible, but again, I don't know what else of Lam's I'd seen at that point.
Right.
I think I'd seen a bunch, but it was Toe that drew me to that picture, and it was Toe that made me sit through that picture when I genuinely thought I was going to saw myself in front of the European cinema's greatest and brightest.
Fantastic stuff. I need to hunt out Triangle. I haven't seen it, but all three of those directors do make me want to hunt it out. So I am going to recommend a film that everyone listening to this will be aware of, and it's more for the first Running Out of Time than the second Running Out of Time, but if you like cat and mouse films about a smart detective going up against a smart criminal who develop a grudging respect for each other that turns into a kind of friendship building to an emotional climax, then Wayne, grow and watch Michael Mann's Heat. Heat is incredible. There's that Peep Show episode where they're wondering why they've gone to the theatre when they could be watching Heat on DVD. And that's how I felt watching Dad's Choice this week. Heat, I recommend it. I'm only teasing. Dan, what's next from you?
I like, given what we're reviewing next week, I like that you've spunked it already.
Why not announce it now? We're doing Narc next time. So please pick up that 4K UHD and watch ahead of that conversation because, I'm not going to say any more. We'll save it for next time. But Dan, what's next from you based on running out of time too?
So I'm going to recommend another Johnny Toe picture. And this is for my dear friends out there in the Arrow video podcast listenership who have never seen a Johnny Toe picture. And there is no judgment from me based on this. Because I genuinely feel like our job is to expose people to films that they've not encountered before.
Yeah, 100%.
So I like, you know, every now and then it falls to us to recommend a popular picture or a movie that maybe like a majority of people have seen.
Heat.
But I want to. So I want to recommend Heat, and by Heat I mean Johnny Toe's 2005 fucking seminal epic Election.
Oh yeah, amazing. Yeah.
So Election is like the one of the fucking jewels in the crown of Hong Kong action cinema. There was a period from like 94 to 2001 when Hong Kong action cinema was absolutely fucking like king of the world. It was so good. You could basically walk into any seedy back room of a Chinese bodega in Chinatown in London and pick a disc off the shelf and it would be an absolutely incredible movie or a mediocre erotic film. But like these movies, like they were pumping them out at such a rate. So many incredible directors cutting their teeth on this subgenre. Just so much good stuff. But then everything went a little bit quiet from like 2002 onwards. Stuff started to wane off. I think accessibility started to interfere with the quality of the stuff that was being made. And then Johnny Toe, who already had a little bit of a reputation, Johnny Toe, who was already like a very well-reputed director in Hong Kong, came out with Election in 2005, and oh my goodness, it's such a banger. It's basically, it's a gang warfare movie. It's about triads in Hong Kong and people like fighting for dominance across the landscape of crime. There's this thing in Asian cinema in general, Chinese and Japanese cinema, slightly more specifically, Japanese cinema very specifically, but here we're talking about Hong Kong, where there's like the honor among thieves trope, which is a phrase that gets bandied about in Western cinema, but is so much more prevalent narratively in Asian cinema. And Election is about the triad space in Hong Kong and the idea that these rival gangs will fight against each other. And even if it's not explicitly stated, there is so often this really like satisfying, like, these are the rules and I'm slightly upset that the other guys are going against the rules stuff in these narratives, which I find so delightful. An Election is just this absolutely fantastic. I like Heat, you mentioned earlier, is such a good corollary for this film. It feels like someone like lifting the corner of a cloth and you seeing into a whole world you weren't aware of. It's such a rich and storied world. It's such an incredibly well-populated and densely packed world that when the film is happening, it feels complete and actual in a way that so many films can't manage. I absolutely adore it.
Yeah, where it's probably different to Heat is that, you know, Heat does make crime look pretty cool, and whereas Election, it does show how fucked up criminals are and how they're like rats in a barrel at times.
Absolutely. Like in Election, they feel trapped in it.
Yeah.
Like it feels like these people are absolutely scrabbling for what they can within a very limited environment.
Yeah, exactly. And no shade on Election as a recommendation. I think it's an amazing recommendation. But I'm surprised you didn't recommend Election 2, considering we're doing Running Out of Time 2, and you don't seem to care about people watching the first part before watching the second part. Because the second part, in my opinion, is better.
I'm deeply ashamed to say that I've not seen Election 2.
Well, yeah, there you go. Well,
and it was on my and I had intended, I'd intended to watch it ahead of this episode, and it
Election 2 is incredible. They're both great, though. So wonderful recommendation.
I've heard that, and I'm very cross with myself.
Oh no, don't be. It just means that you've got an amazing movie to watch, and most of the people listening to this have two amazing movies to watch. So yeah, really great recommendation. And yeah, I'm gonna go with another super mainstream choice. It's a sillier sequel to a superior first movie. To tie directly into Running Out of Time 2. Like that movie, this one repeats itself in places, but still has its own charm and fun moments. It is Beverly Hills Cop 2, which I actually prefer to the first film because of nostalgia. It was the first one I watched, not because it's actually better than the original. It's probably worse. It's ridiculous. It's preposterous. It's beautiful to look at. It's Tony Scott, so director of True Romance, really cranking up the style. And yeah, I love Eddie Murphy as an actor, and especially in this era. And his charisma is just off the scale in this film. And so, yeah, there's a lot of charisma being thrown around in Running Out of Time too. So that's another reason to recommend it. So if you haven't seen Beverly Hills Cop or Beverly Hills Cop 2, why not watch Running Out of Time, Beverly Hills Cop, Running Out of Time 2, Beverly Hills Cop 2, and just have the weirdest day of your life.
I mean, that sounds absolutely terrific. And I desperately, like, I've not seen either of the Beverly Hills Cop movies in, I'm going to say 20 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was.
I remember loving them. Like, my affection for them is very high.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I used to watch especially part two just over and over again. Rent it from the video shop all the time. I loved it so much. Loved Eddie Murphy back then. But yeah, cool. All right, that is it for recommendations based on the film. Let's move on to recommendations based on the past couple of weeks. Dan, please go first.
So anyone that follows me on Twitter will have had this recommendation spoiled for them because I didn't want to keep it to myself until now. Given that the streaming and cinematic release of it was a week or so ago. Mm-hmm. But there's a fantastic filmmaker called Will Gilby, who was one of the editors on Borderlands, which is not quite how I met him, actually. But he's been an editor for a long time. He has a BAFTA for that weird Bros documentary that happened. But
oh, good for brother, Will. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Him and his brother Julian have been making films for a long time. They did the first Rolling with the Nines and Essex Boys movies, and then, like, you know, a lot of gangstery stuff. Horrible Place to Die. I worked for them on Plastic and one of the ABCs of Death 2 sequences, C for Capital Punishment. But Will was one of the editors on Borderlands and absolutely, like, fucking, like, pulled that home. I think he was the last editor on that. But Will, so my wife Jen produced a short film for Will called Turncoat with Neil Maskell and Ez Belliers a few years ago, which is fantastic. And Will's been, like, on the cusp of making a feature for fucking ages. A lot of this is to put out in the open any, like, bias I might have, because obviously, like, you know, I've worked with Will a bunch. I know that he's got a great eye for this stuff. He's a very talented individual. But I also want to put that out there so that I can undermine it, because his debut feature, Jericho Ridge, which is just by the time this goes up, will be on streaming for a week or so. Honestly, on paper, it draws comparison to Assault on Precinct 13, which is entirely justified narratologically, but it is one of the tightest and most well-conceived scripts I have watched on screen in a very, very long time, and we're not friends anymore because I didn't get to work on it. he's a great filmmaker, but, like, honestly, it is so fucking taut. They do all the world building in the first act. None of it feels shoe leather. None of it feels like it's, like, wasting your time. It's incredibly concise. It's incredibly, like, structured without feeling rote. And then when it kicks off and it turns into an action picture at the beginning of the second act, it is fucking relentless. Like, it does not give up. None of the stuff that was seeded in the first act, or continues to be seeded in the second act, feels signposted. Like, you know how when you and I will watch a picture together, Sam, and like someone would say a thing like, "Oh, this is the most poisonous substance known to man," and then one of us would turn to the other and be like, "Don't worry about that. That's not going to be important later."
My catchphrase. You should probably ignore that.
Yeah, don't worry about that. Ignore that. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. But like, there's no point in this.
Oh, that's great.
Where
that's
anything great. Feels signposted like that. But yeah. When you get to the third act, it's fucking constant. You're like, "Ah, oh, fuck me. They said that earlier. I know about that. Here we go."
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
It's so well structured. It's so well put together. And then the action on top of that, the action stuff is beautiful. There's some really great, like, sort of post-Chekhov stuff going on that is, oh, it's such a delight. It's the best action film I've seen in the cinema for certainly 3 or 4 years.
It's funny you say that, because I've been reading a new author to me, though he's got plenty of books that I'm kind of working my way through. But his name is Ronald Malfi, and he's basically like a Stephen King equivalent, like really, really very, very Stephen King-esque. But one of the things I love about him is that he does exactly the same thing. He'll mention like an object or something throwaway, really, really throwaway, that you just do not clock at all as being relevant. It really works in the context that it's mentioned. It doesn't stand out. And then you get to the ending and you're like, "Oh, holy fuck, he's laid all of that out and I didn't notice at all." So yeah, that is one of my favorite narrative experiences. So if you're saying that this film does that, then yeah, I can't wait to
exactly
watch it.
Exactly that.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. All right, well, I will move on to my sole recommendation this week, and that will be a lesser-known Hitchcock that I watched for the first time recently. I absolutely loved it. I saw it on the big screen where it really shone. It is Stage Fright, Alfred Hitchcock's Stage Fright.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and it's a film about acting where Hitchcock's skill with actors just really, really transcends. Like, so many close-ups of faces combined with his always genius lighting that just said so much through performance alone. Just beautiful, beautiful face acting. I think Tarantino's a bit down on Hitchcock. He's kind of said some shady things in the past, so there's a chance he hasn't seen this one, but it's such a Tarantino premise. It's about an actress who's trying to prove her crush is innocent of murder by pretending to be someone else around the main suspect and a version of herself around the policeman who's investigating the case. So, yeah, and there's all this setup about her. Is she a good actress, isn't she? And then she's put into this situation and yeah, it increases the tension. It's great. Wonderful, wonderful movie. And if it's ever playing near you, like in a retro screening, please do try and see it on the big screen. But if you haven't caught it, just watch it. Add it to your watch list because it's wonderful. I recommend it. Stage Fright. Dan, what's next from you?
So next from me is I went to the cinema on my own to watch Monkey Man, which I was unsure about how I'd feel about. And I was really, really pleasantly surprised.
Oh, good.
There's some stuff in it that's kind of deeply silly. Not all of it meshes, but overall, it's an absolute delight. It wears its influences on its sleeve, and then also a second sleeve that it kind of tries to mask from the audience. But it's like it's a thoroughbred picture. I think our regular audience members, those of us who have a deep seated vein in genre cinema, will see a lot more than it maybe wants you to see as far as influence goes. But I like when I first started realizing that it was plundering the depths of this subgenre, I expected to be annoyed that it was taking this stuff. There's a moment in the film, relatively early on, there's a moment in the film where Dev Patel's character comes into a room and he's looking to buy a gun. And it's already done this like weird, like Dev Patel is switched into the criminal underworld scene, which blew open the reality of the space. So I was ready for everything to be peculiar. And, and Dev's like, I've got this much money, I want to buy a gun. And the guy's like, I can give you this gun. But if you've got this much money, I can offer you all of these. And like, it does like a sort of a Matrix, like, boof, here's the gun catalogue, like a massive space. But then immediately he goes, he grabs one gun and he goes, this is very popular. It's the John Wick gun. It's the only right. time they mention another film in the movie. And I had a light problem with it because I was fine with them not referencing, like overtly referencing any of the other films that they were borrowing from. Because it is, derivative sounds like a very negative term. It is a negative term. But so I don't know what to say other than derivative because it isn't, this isn't a negative, this isn't a criticism. But, It is deeply derivative. There's so much on screen that you've seen being done before. And directly coming out of this movie, I was talking to a friend and I said, you don't go to a restaurant and complain that you've tasted all of those individual ingredients before. A recipe is about combining ingredients in a way that you don't expect.
Absolutely. And yeah, yeah.
And I think Monkey Man is a pretty solid example of that. Like it, like Dev Patel as a you know, everyone knows he's a fucking great actor, but like he's a great actor in this, but he's also a very good director. There's a moment in Ong Bak where a tuk tuk crashes, goes past the underpass of a flyover, and in the graffiti on the wall, it says, Luc Besson, we are waiting for your call, or something like that. And it felt a little bit like this whole movie was that one shot from Ong Bak. And then also the other shots from this movie were very specific other shots from Ong Bak. but they weren't overtly referenced. Only John Wick was referenced. And like
right.
that was the only thing I kind of hold against it. Like I kind of wish it hadn't mentioned John Wick.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, fuck. Obviously, all your audience have seen John Wick. But also, most of your audience have seen Ong Bak and Iron Monkey and, like, you know, all these other pictures that it's, like, borrowing from. But I don't object to it borrowing from them. Like, it's a cocktail.
Yeah.
It's a recipe. It's doing its thing with these disparate elements and creating a genuinely very enjoyable film.
That's great. I'd heard that the action was a little bit choppy, so I was like, I don't know if I want that. But if you enjoyed it, then I will actually give it a go for sure. But also, to use your restaurant analogy, to only reference John Wick is like ordering something for dinner and the waiter coming out and eating it for you and then spitting it onto your plate, because John Wick is already a derivative of all those other movies, you know.
You sound like the most ungrateful baby bird.
I'm putting that
Mama
on
bird,
my resume.
Mama Bird, John Wick, has worked so hard to gobble up all this Hong Kong cinema.
It's true. All right, let's move on to extra features, extra features.
Extra features?
No extra features. I just, you know, wanted to bring it back one more time. If you like movies and recommendations and obscure weird shit, then please do check out VHS Quest. It's on Patreon/VHS Quest. It's me and Shay every week having a lot of fun, actually. We've really kind of found our rhythm, our groove recently, and lots of laughter and silliness talking about movies such as Mute Witness, which has an Arrow release coming up, Return of Swamp
yes.
Thing, Mark of the Devil, Ghost in the Machine, Day of the Panther, and modern films as well. We recently discussed The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. So weird stuff that you've probably seen, but also modern stuff as well. So that's over at VHS Quest, patreon.com/VHS Quest, and it's $4 a month or $1 a week for all that good stuff. Dan, anything that you would like to talk about or promote?
No, I mean, other than the general stuff that I have, that I've worked on that's coming out, I went to see Horoscope with my team recently, and had a lovely time with that.
Horoscope or Tarot?
Sorry, yes, it's now called Tarot. they say Horoscope so many times in that film, Sam.
And it's a better title. It's a better title because horror, well, scope.
Yeah. But the thing is, I think they say Horoscope so many times that they decided they had to change the title because it felt too on the nose.
I see. What are we, some kind of horoscope?
There's the scope of this horror is so grand.
But how was Tarot?
You know what? We had a lovely time. There were about 25 of us in the screen and maybe 8 other people. And at one point, someone told us to shut up.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, which I genuinely feel bad about. Like, I think that we may have negatively impacted the viewing experience of someone, and that is the literal opposite of what I want to do with my career.
Yeah. Oh dear. Well, you know, hopefully that just means that they'll pay to go and see it in the cinema and add to that box office, eh?
Well, I genuinely, like, I considered going up to them and saying, "I'm really sorry, my team worked on it, and I just wanted them to enjoy the film, and if I could recoup your ticket, maybe I can pay for that, and you can go and see something else kind of for free or whatever, you know."
So this was in the public screening?
Oh, this is a public screening. Yeah. This isn't...
I'm going to cut what I said screening. Then. Shit, I'm going to cut what I said then.
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't at all. Like, it's like, this is the thing. Like, we were all very excited. This was this was before, and we went to see this movie, and I think we probably likely negatively impacted someone's viewing of it.
Oh dear.
Yeah, and I would have gone up to them and said, "Can I recoup your ticket?" But they had left because we were spending too much time photographing each other in front of the credits.
Oh my god, that you awful, awful group. But I'm glad you had fun.
I cannot imagine a worse way to watch the film.
Oh jeez. All right, well, Tarot, go see it. It's in cinemas right now. And how can people follow you on the old internet?
I'm at 13FingerFX on Twitter or Blue Sky or Instagram or, you know, whatever you want.
Cool. And I am at SamAsher23 on Instagram. I'm also posting about lots of books on Goodreads, including Incidents Around the House, which I read recently, and it's fucking amazing. It's out in June, and it's the new one from the guy who wrote Bird Box, which became a Netflix film I wasn't a really big fan of. But this book is easily the scariest thing I've ever read. It's fucking incredible. Like, the way it escalates and the stakes, amazing book. So, yeah, Incidents Around the House, I recommend that. And, yeah, that's it for this week, right, Dan?
Yes, it is indeed.
Come back in 2 weeks for Narc. Which I'm really looking forward to talking about with Daniel. And until then, thank you so much for listening, and we promise to be more professional next time.
According to the code of the whatever PD, we will be more professional.
Yes, next time.
Bye. Bye.